in its essence, love is not mystery of, do I fit in your life? Love is, I know where I fit, and you fit in the same place, and it's so peaceful.
Welcome to the Expanded Podcast with your host, Lacey Phillips. As a leading manifestation advisor with a process that's, well, radically different from the old New Age model, mine is rooted in psychology, neuroscience, and my energetic gifts. I created this podcast to help you expand your subconscious limiting beliefs about the potential of deserving the manifestations you're calling in. Therefore, you're tuning into this podcast series to show your subconscious that anything you desire is possible. And by pressing play, you've already started the process of manifesting it. So last week on Instagram, I did an Ask Me Anything on stories, and there were quite a few of you that reached out and said, are you going to continue your roundups? I miss your lifestyle shares. A lot were asking, can you tell me what you do with your hair and your face? Skin? On that note, the hair and the skin, you can actually click the link below. It's an essentials page where I always have that information. It's really simple and easy. So I'll let you go check that out there. On the skin front, I haven't really changed much of anything since 8 months ago, except for the Beam Protocol. So it's really all an internal thing. If you're wondering what's the Beam Protocol, I'll link below Karen Hurd's very first episode where we talk about it at length. And you'll understand why my skin is looking the way that it's looking after now 8 months of being on this protocol. But I have actually been putting a little roundup together for you of lifestyle. I think it's absolutely important to be supporting small business right now if we can, where we can. I know I have been, and highlighting small business that needs that support, and then just overall what I'm digging for spring. So that's kind of what this collective roundup is. The first is the hat that I've been wearing everywhere. You saw it on Instagram this week. It's by Lindsay Dunn. It's the Leland in Mushroom. It's a felt, and it kind of has a brim that curves up. It's really cool. I've been wearing it everywhere. I think she's even in this community and doing this work, so check that link out below. She's a fellow community member. And then, of course, you've heard me talk about this before. One of my favorite jewelers of our time right now is Mexico City. She handmakes all of her pieces, uses 22 karat gold. I've talked about that before and my thoughts on it and the projection that I believe it has and why I love gold. And so the piece that I have that's the newest of hers is the quartz pendant amulet, and it's stunning. It's so beautiful. So I just want to highlight her and her work. My three favorite jewelers at this moment, it's Alexa De La Cruz with that quartz pendant amulet. And then, of course, Kelsey Potter. I have quite a few of her pieces. I've talked about that in the past. And Savannah King. Many of you keep asking, what is that pearl ring you're wearing? You're asking it a lot. And then the flat circular gold ring that I wear. The pearl is Savannah King, and the flat circular, the compass ring, is by Kelsey Potter. And now you will be seeing a lot more of the Alexa De La Cruz pendant. It's stunning. She's a very vibrant human, and I believe that she also is doing this work as well. So I want to highlight that. And then this is a great one, Caroline Z. Hurley. Many of you probably know her work. It's very specific and unique, a lot of block printing. It's woven, lifestyle, beautiful pieces. And she actually got in touch and said, my husband and I have been doing the DREs during this time, and we're having one of our best months ever. Can I send you something? And I said, I love all of your woven pieces. And she sent a few things, but what I really want to highlight are the Hector woven napkins. So all of this will be linked in the show notes. If you want to find them, say you're listening to this on Spotify, go directly to our homepage, click on this episode, and you'll see this roundup linked there. These are so beautiful. They're very affordable and accessible. and they'll make any home look stunning. So if anybody's interested in my style, you have to go check out these napkins. And then there's a jacket that I shared a couple of weeks ago by Jessie Cam, the Decker jacket in salt. To me, it's my favorite spring piece. I think it's the only true clothing item I've actually bought in spring. The other things mentioned here, I got a couple of weeks before spring, but I saw this jacket and I was like, that is the coolest spring jacket. It has the best neck and it's a perfect mid-season, will be great in the summer too. It's light, you can throw it over, but you can also button it up and it feels a little bit warmer. It's just industrious and chic. And my friend Jamie actually texted me last week and she was like, oh, I hate when you share anything because it sells out, and I guess it was sold out. I'm not going to take the credit for that, but it is back in stock now. So you can go check that link out. I love it. The other thing to put on your radar, if your area is requiring masks or you want to wear them for safety, there's an older brother mask that's really chic. I actually had it custom made and now you can buy it directly from the site, but it's all organic, literally the cleanest Japanese cotton on the market, hand dyed in the Japanese traditional form of indigo, or they have at this time too, a chamomile tie dye, which is very light yellowy tie-dye out of chamomile. It's so great. And it's really special because they're two packs. So when you buy one, you receive two and then they donate two. And a lot of people have been pulling for the causes. So I know that they've been donating to various incredible causes. And Max has a really big connection with Skid Row in Los Angeles. So that's the cool thing about them. So for every two, you get two are donated, and they're the cleanest masks I've seen out there so far. So that'll be linked below. Two shirts I want to put on your radar that I'm obsessed with right now. And I bought these right before spring, the Eve Denim Violet shirt in trench. It's like the ultimate Oxford button-up Victorian. So it has a high collar, it has Victorian, I don't know what you call them, at the hands, but it's so chic. And you can have it monogrammed with your initials if you'd like. The color that I love, trench, is back in. I ended up getting, I think, a small, and it was a little too big, so I had to exchange for an extra small. So just know that it runs a little large, but it's so beautiful, so chic. And then the second one I want to put on your radar, I love this brand. I don't know if I'm saying it correctly because I've only read it, Shop Mill or Millet. I'm not sure, but it'll be linked, and it's their Vanessa top in pearl. So chic. Oh my gosh. If you tuck it into pants, skirt, dress pants, beautiful. So that's one I want to put on your radar. And then just a couple of things to keep busy. I'm not going to give a book recommendation because in this episode, the guest drops so many great book bombs that I don't want to overwhelm you because even I have my Amazon cart full of them. But I do want to put onto your radar, if you're looking for a great at-home workout, I'm obsessed with her, Melissa Wood Health. You can subscribe for, I think, $9.99 a month or pay a year up front. Very accessible. Go check out her Instagram. It's going to motivate you so much based on everybody that does her workouts. You know that she shares on her Instagram stories because they're all so fit. And the key thing about these workouts is they're the chillest workouts I've ever seen. It's very targeted Pilates, long lean lines, I think is her hashtag. They're like 21 minute workouts. I can do them while healing now. That's how I've been keeping myself sane and working out during this time, and then walks around the neighborhood. The mini series that I binged is The English Game. Same creator of Downton Abbey. You know, I just love anything period piece that's English. That's my whole obsession. So I love that one. I binged it in a day and a half. So I'll put that on your radar if you too love that. And then everybody's always asking, what music are you listening to in the background? I have a great playlist on Spotify that I'm loving right now. It's Reflections 2 by Zen Hanami, I think. So we'll have that linked. It's great. Theta playlist that I think everybody will love who's into that. And important to note, not one of those are affiliate or sponsored. I just love sharing the cool stuff that I find. Now turning in more to this week, We have so many bonus things that we've launched in the pathway that it literally takes multiple episodes to talk about them. But the pathway, for anybody that doesn't know, and I'll explain it further in this episode, it's our all-encompassing members portal that has every single one of our workshops in it. So pathway members, something new to check out. At the back of the workshops, we have now loaded a last day called the index. And the index is your most frequently asked questions amongst you and me answering them. So when you click on it, they're categorized. So let's say it's in shadow. At that very last day, we have categories of them. So it's like subtopics, the most frequently asked questions and my answers. They're in little paragraphs. It's very digestible and it just helps you take the workshop way deeper and probably answer questions that you're having while you're in it. So look out for that. Second thing to note, we are going to be adding audio to every workshop. We're busy over here and it's me recording, so it takes so much time. But the start here has it. If you have a membership right now and you've been lull or complacent or haven't been doing it and you're like, I don't know what to do next, please go inside of the pathway. There's one that's called new start here. Click on it. You have my full audio day by day now to suggest how to navigate the workshops, which one to do next, frequently asked questions like how often to do them, how will you have the most success. So go check that out. We will be releasing over time a lot more of my, I guess you could call it kind of like an audible to each workshop because there is a lot of reading and hopefully this speeds up for everybody to be able to integrate and do these workshops quicker. Last week, I mentioned that we have now launched the TBM coaching with our first two coaches, Amanda Blair and Heather Whitaker. I'm not going to go into length, but if you are curious about that, please go listen to last week's intro and you'll hear all about it. If you have been desiring to work one-on-one with a coach who can hold your hand through this process as a member, if you've done How to Manifest the workshop, they are here to guide you. And I'm not going to go into length because look out for the first episode next week, which will be me moderating their two sessions with clients. So you will get to hear both of them in action to learn a lot and see their coaching styles and have great takeaways from that to see what you're going to reap and benefit out of that session. And this intro is already pretty long, so I am not going to read off the hashtag Stay in Trust, which are our members who have been sharing their testimonies of what they have been manifesting during this time of quarantine to show you that it's possible to also reap magnetism, manifest during and on the other side of this. So what you can do to go read those is go to our show notes where we will showcase them for you. It's so imperative if right now you especially don't believe and haven't seen that it's possible to continue building magnetism and manifesting during this time. And if you're just tuning in and you're curious about the energetics during this pandemic, please go back to the bonus episode that I recorded a few weeks back. It'll also be linked below in the show notes of me talking about the energetics. And stay tuned to the end of this episode because we have picked out our winner of the 5-star review. We will announce you and read off your review at the very end. Let's finally get into today's guest, Mark Groves. This is our final week of love. So we've had during the pandemic and quarantine in LA's calendar, we've shared a new theme each week. You can go back through and listen to them. And the final one is love. And I couldn't think of a better person to land on because I admire Mark so much. If you have not heard his first episode with us, it'll be linked below. Please go back and listen. He is going to be your new complete specialist, and I don't want to say guru because I think guru culture is over for everybody, and I certainly don't think he considers himself that. He's going to be your new obsession for all things pertaining to what he calls himself a human connection specialist, but anything to do with relationships, especially dating, in relationship, and most importantly, exiting. It's just mind-boggling. We go through all three of those categories in this, specific to this time. he just shares so many incredible tips if you're looking for hints that it is time to exit a potential relationship, how to do it, including a ceremony. It's so beautiful. Then we move into dating and what you should know about this time, be looking for, looking out for, dating energetics. And then we move into if you are currently in a relationship and how to strengthen it, take it deeper. You're going to have unbelievable amounts of aha moments. It hits everybody, covers everyone. And I don't think there's one person that will walk away from this episode empty-handed. So I'm going to stop this extensively long intro and cue us into this episode with Mark Groves. How are you doing? How are you with all of this?
You know what? I'm really good. I'm sure I'm like you in the sense that my business was already pretty derived from online. And then also I've been very much in my own isolation cell for a long time. So when they're like, you got to stay home and stay away from people, I was like, check, already done that.
Yeah. Okay. I was like, oh, okay. My life didn't change really. I mean, you know, that's a huge privilege, but yeah, I was like, I'm already a huge self-isolator that works from home.
Yeah, same with me. And also, I also found that I'm a bit of, you know, I'm like a toddler that if you tell me I can't do something, then I want to do it more. So I'm now also observing that part of me that's like, oh.
What's coming up for you around that?
Well, I think it's that, at least in my experience of a lot of people, is yes, self-isolating is important for, you know, as all the language that's derived from COVID and what's going on for me also feels in a way like flattening the curve. And we all have these like these lingo, and the lingo brings up a bit of a intuitive fear for me, like a resistance, because that's how most like culty things occur, is that you derive language. And so it's not to say that I'm not like, this is all a hoax. This is all I'm participating in educating myself on all aspects of what's happening.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe anything that I'm told.
I'm the same.
Yeah. And it's not like I'm a conspiracy theorist in the fact that, oh, I just don't believe and I only believe alternative theories. No, I educate myself and then make the best decision for myself. I don't believe what governments tell me, because you don't have to look very far back to realize that governments lie to us. And that is, so there's like this underlying bit of fear of the liberties we're trading. And I think about it in the context of this, that, you know, in Vancouver, the Olympics were in 2010. And when the Olympics occurred, the city of Vancouver said, we're going to raise the price of parking for while the Olympics are on, and then we're going to lower the price of parking when the Olympics are over. I think everyone who knows their governments knows that the parking isn't going down. Like, they derive so much tax money from it, and then the price never went down. And so my fear is that we are giving these things away, of course, for the greater good, for, you know, people with compromised immune systems, people with, you know, whatever. But what will we do when it's over, or when, like, where will our liberties go? Will they come back? That has brought up a lot of fear for me.
Yeah. And I think that, like you, for anybody who's really educating themselves holistically with it all around and making their own educated decisions, I think all of us fear that, you know, and just pharma. I mean, there's so many things.
I used
there.
To be a pharmaceutical rep, so I.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, how, like, you know, you have a direct relationship and experience with that. How do you feel about all of this in through that lens?
Well, you know, there's no doubt that, I mean, when I was a pharmaceutical rep, I certainly didn't have this perspective because I was in the world of it. So, you know, your identity, it's hard to take in information that challenges the altruistic belief that you have that the pharmaceutical companies are only out for the good of people. But as soon as you start to gather more information, you see that all the systems are connected. And, you know, it's like the food industry then derives, you know, like high sugar content, fat's bad. That created a whole generation of people with so many comorbidities, because fat is not bad for you, you know, in some context. Again, it's about education. And I live with this perspective that I don't hold on to any parts of my identity. Like, I heard this from Russell Brand. He said, I always live as if my identity is fluid. that as soon as some piece of information comes in that invalidates something I used to stand for, then I'm open to my identity shifting as information comes in. And this is really the beautiful work of being able to be in relationship with anyone, whether it's romantic or not, is that many worlds exist at the exact same time. That in a conversation where you and I might have a conflict, we're actually both right in the sense that based on your world and your experience and your pain and your wounding or whatever it is, in that moment, and I think we all know that feeling, I am so right now. But it's in the openness of understanding someone else's world that you realize there's a bridge between both. And I think this is the same thing that is required of us now is, yes, there are certain views that are the mainstream media view, but I'm open to all the views because I feel like if I only listen to one, then I lose the privilege of being able to make choices for myself.
I think you were just so eloquent about how you put that. And it's truly how I try to exist as well. I think just being an Aquarius, I naturally tend to flow that way. And that is where the true magic of evolution is, right? And continuing to grow. So I think that was really beautiful. One thing I know that's an update, I think, since we last spoke, is that you uncoupled. Am I correct in that?
I did. We ended our relationship last September, and then, of course, was an ongoing, beautiful experience. But man, what a rocker that was! But it was great. It was like it continues to be a beautiful evolution of diving deeper within myself.
Can you talk about uncoupling in general and your perspective on it? Your biggest takeaways when you guide people through the process? The most beneficial tools. I just want to touch on it for a bit for people out there. I mean, I know that this situation is going to bring up quite a bit of uncoupling, I imagine, at the end.
Yeah,
you know, there's nowhere to hide right now.
Well, and that's the thing is that if you were not facing truths before and where you could go to work and distract yourself or you'd go about your day or you'd bury yourself in friendships or wine or whatever your strategy is to avoid the truth, you're face to face with it. And the unfortunate side of that is that, you know, things like domestic violence have gone, you know, way up. Divorce, as far as I understand, in places like China has skyrocketed now that, you know, things are open back up for the most part there. You know, for me, the breakup or breakups in general, I honestly don't know that there's a greater container for growth because in grief is very grounding. Grief and pain are grounding. It doesn't matter where your grief comes from or where your pain comes from. It's grounding and it's heavy. And it's heavy in the sense that you can't run from it. You could numb it. You can do all the things that cause you to put it in a box and then pretend the box doesn't exist. But again, I promise you that box will make its way into your life in one way or another. You know, positive emotion is beautiful. It's fleeting though. And it makes you float, you know, when you're in, you know, in joy and abundance and happiness. That's a beautiful state of being. And I don't want to confuse the word abundance. Abundance is actually exists in states of grief too. So it's not like one or the other. Just like joy can exist as you're grieving too. It's just the avoidance of grief and sadness that causes us to not be grounded. Whenever anyone is going through a transition of any type, especially relationally, I'm like, yes. Yes, you are finally done with your bullshit. Finally, you're standing still because we get so carried away in the chaos and the busyness and the wanting things to work out and the, you know, what are people going to think of me if we break up or I get divorced or any of those things. And we are thrown into the present moment. That's the thing about negative emotion as people would code it. I don't see it as negative emotion, but we've taught people that being sad is bad, that any form of sadness you need a pill to fix it. And really emotion is an invitation to feel, to move, to evoke motion. That process of being still and having so much love and continue to have so much love for my previous partner that for the first time in my life, I had no choice but to constantly choose grace. That was a gift, but it was, I'd say, the hardest gift I've ever been given, but one where I couldn't turn away from unconditional love. So no matter what the circumstance was, where it would be so easy to be like, I'm angry, you do this, I'm keeping this thing, you know, from the house. But being constantly coming back to my heart and being like, there's not a malicious cell in my body towards her and towards the love and the container that we created. Whew, it was a dance into the depths of myself. And where was I not feeling? Where was I not noticing? You know, you realize when you're in the automation of life that you're often not noticing so many things. I was sort of thrust back into deep, deep feeling.
I love the word grace. We touch on that a lot. You know, I talk about in manifestation, when you experience a rock bottom, which I see you being earthquaked, right? There's something yeah. that's wanting to come through. You're not growing your worth quick enough to connect with it. And one of the really important steps during a rock bottom is to find your grace. And yes. I kind of say like the energetic of it is sometimes it doesn't always have to be this. Of course, the more evolved one is in the situation, but it's kind of like eating shit with a spoon yeah. and finding, you know what I mean?
And then finding it's actually a weird fertilizer.
Totally. Just... Exactly. Oh my gosh. For the most amazing growth, right? For you, when you talk about grace and that you continued to come back to that in your heart, what's the word I want? What tool or what, how did you come to that conclusion? How did you arrive there? Because it's actually really hard, I think a hard thing, certainly based on the many different ways we've been raised. It's an evolution to get there. It's a consciousness. How did you find that? Or what are your tools around that?
You know, I totally agree with it. It's like eating shit with a spoon. I was joking reluctantly that it was like eating a giant piece of humble pie. And mm-hmm. humble pie doesn't necessarily taste the best, but it is freedom. So, you know, it's like in eating the shit, you're free because you're no longer in the traps of what anger and resentment, not clean anger, unhealthy anger. What they can keep you in a prison of a cycle of other people's behavior determines yourself and your worth. For example, we did a closing ceremony in our relationship, and it was about like, you know, a month after things had ended. And we just based on geographic circumstances, our final conversation couldn't happen in person because I was away for work and she was, you know, so all the things. I felt compelled to have, like, I felt like we needed to have a closing ceremony. So did she. So I went on, you know, the Google and I looked up like closing. I'm like, someone must have done something like this, right? So I took a group of different ones that I read. I sent her the idea of what I wanted to do. And the night that we agreed to do it, I drove over to the house and I was sitting outside and I had so much reluctance to want to do it. You know, I'd never done something like that, like closed something with grace. And so being fully seen in my pain of the fracture and not like closing my heart, running, avoiding. Also, I don't drink. So I couldn't, you know, find my solace at the bottom of a pint glass.
Yeah.
So I sat in the car and I asked myself, do I not want to do this because it's just not the right time? And I'm just not ready? Or do I not want to do this because I'm afraid? And I'm afraid of being seen. I'm afraid of what it's going to demand of me because it was a new moment. I'd never been it. And I made a commitment long ago that I would do everything that required my expansion. And so in that moment, I was like, no, you're being asked to grow in order to do this. Like I literally had to grow in the doing of it. And so that as soon as I had that feeling, I was like, opened the car door, went in the house and did the thing. And it was one of the most beautiful, one of the most transformative experiences of my life. And it brought a peace to it, but it also, you know, when you're asking like that grace piece, how do you choose it? How do you know it? It was that I was so proud of who I was and how I showed up in the face of everything, you know, like, who are you in the face of rejection, and abandonment. Because it's one thing to, you know, be a monk on a mountain meditating in the Himalayas. But who are you when you're on the streets of New York? Who are you when your partner says, I feel disconnected from you, or your business is struggling? That's where who you are truly shows. And for me, grace is the commitment to grace, is the commitment to choosing that. Who do I want to be? How do I want to be remembered? What requires my expansion? And if it requires my expansion, I must do it. And I think there's an important caveat for people who tend to be codependent or try to fix people. And that is recognizing that there is a difference between tolerance and compassion. Because often when we say choose grace, people will be like, oh, now I got to reach out to them and do the thing. No, you do not. Don't use that as another reason to go back into a cycle of abuse or back into a cycle of codependency. So I think recognizing that you can be compassionate and unconditionally loving and graceful to someone and also not tolerate bullshit, that's a really important separation, I think.
I love that. And, you know, I see the world through energetics. That's sort of my gift. And what you just touched on, I think, is so important. And I often say with energetics, the opposite is usually the medicine. That's where the true growth is. Mm. And I think you outlined so many perfect examples of that, right? The reluctancy to go in and making the choice. And, you know, even touching on potential codependency or cycles of abuse, there's a whole other opportunity there in choosing grace, usually being the opposite, you know? And so I just wanted to point that out, because I just think for the listener, that's so important to hear what Mark said. But another thing I really want to touch on is you said that, you know, a bit ago, you've made a choice that you're going to choose whatever's going to benefit your expansion. I'm paraphrasing. Mm-hmm. Talk about that for a minute, because that is where magnetism is. Choosing the grace is where magnetism is. Let's hear about that moment of clarity that you decided, I'm going to walk towards whatever's going to expand me.
And that moment's a funny one. The interesting thing that I hear from people when they say, I don't know how it's going to go, or I'm afraid of how it's going to go. Or sorry, I'm afraid that I don't know how it's going to go. That's when I'm really jacked for people, because it means they're requiring a new part of themselves. They're creating a new story they've never been in. If the moment is predictable, then you've already been in it. And you know, that doesn't lead to an expanded life. So many plays on the name of this podcast, by the way. I was thinking about that.
We're hitting it home.
Yeah. You didn't even tell me to say these things. So for me, actually, the moment is an interesting one where I made that commitment. So when I was in my, I'd say late 20s, maybe early 30s, I'm now 41. I remember I was seeing this girl that I'd been seeing for like 3-4 months, and seeing might be a strong term, but I was seeing her literally pretty much every Sunday, and every Sunday we'd hook up. And I wouldn't, you know, at first it was like fulfilling as it can be, you know. And it was a, you know, totally communicated, in integrity, arrangement, experience. But I wasn't left feeling proud of myself or fulfilled or even, you know, in integrity. And I remember showering one morning and I remember thinking to myself, after this occurs, I feel empty. I feel like my gut would kind of hurt, my stomach would hurt. And I remember just in that moment, it wasn't some sort of like prolific level of awareness or prolific message, but it was like, you choose this. And every time you choose this, knowing that you are left feeling this way, it's no longer a mistake and it's no longer unconscious. You can pretend it is. And then that, of course, feeds the need for alcohol, drugs, anything that pulls you away from who you are. Because if you're not paying attention to the feeling, and you know it's there living in the ether of your experience, the truth of what your behavior is like and what your integrity is. It was just in that moment where I was like, no more. I realized that I was living on so much unrealized knowledge. Like I had so much knowledge, but it wasn't wisdom because it wasn't integrated. And I was recently at this retreat and I had this awareness when one of the teachers said something. You only need to be reminded of things that you haven't integrated yet. Because I was writing down in the moment, I was writing like a reminder, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, holy shit, The only reason I needed that reminder is because I'm not living the knowledge.
Wow. An incredible takeaway.
It was this fucking crazy moment where I was just like, oh, you're saying you need reminders because you're not willing to integrate it. You're not willing to do the work. You're not willing to listen. And I keep coming to that, like, what is the highest level of knowledge that I have? And I will always live at it. So as soon as I learn something, I change. As soon as I recognize something is unhealthy, I change. And that has been my greatest form of freedom, because one, I'm not living in the shame of experiences that haven't been integrated. I believe that pain only sits in memories that haven't been fully garnished, like the growth from them, the true essence of what you can learn in that pain hasn't been fully invited into your own expansion. And because it hasn't been invited into your own expansion and you're not fully listening, which doesn't mean everything happens for a reason. That part doesn't matter to me, because a lot of people get caught in that. It happened. So what are you going to learn from it? Because if you don't learn from it, you're going to repeat it. And then you're going to tell me that you just have bad luck and life just doesn't work out for you. And sure, sometimes we do have bad luck. And sometimes we repeat the same stories over and over again, pretending we don't know that we know that there's a wisdom in there that we have not lived yet. We're not willing to say no to the dysfunctional person. We're not willing to say no to that dysfunctional behavior. And we're not willing to say no to the unavailable person. Because on the other side of that is a whole other version of us that is probably so big and so glorious that we don't know how to hold it. And we're afraid no one else will be able to hold it, because we still think someone else holding it validates whether it's worth being held. But someone else validating it means shit. That's living a same old codependent life of suppression.
Yep.
And it's in that expansion that you go, holy fuck, I'm a lot. And it's great. And everything is on the other side.
I totally 1,000% agree. Many people have a very hard time taking that first step to, you know, pass their fear that's going to lead into that expansion. In a nutshell, how do you get people through that?
You know, that's the magical leap. You know, that's the first time you say the thing. That's the first time you say no. That's the first moment that you decide that how you show up determines how you feel about yourself, rather than what someone else thinks about how you show up. You or I or anyone can only lead someone to the leap. But it is only through their own courageous behavior that they say, I don't know how this is going to go, and yet I'm going to do it. And it's weird, because of course, the human mind craves certainty. You know, and on some level, of course, that's required. Like, there's, you know, ground below my feet. I have a heartbeat. Like, the things that really keep us grounded. But what we don't see is that certainty in our life generally is usually just patterns of repeated behaviors that aren't healthy. So we'd rather be in a painful pattern that's familiar than an unfamiliar pattern that could bring us everything we've ever wanted. And that's an interesting conundrum. So I think what's important for people is to understand that it is normal to be terrified of the unknown. And it's also normal to want to seek the validation of other people's opinions of you. That's how evolution worked. But now there's a new normal that's available to us. And that new normal is that my worth doesn't sit in your validation of my worth. Just like my opinion, my feelings don't cease to exist because you don't agree with my feelings. My experience of my feelings is the validation of my feelings. Just taking the leap of deciding that you're going to decide what your life is going to be like and how you're going to feel, that small but giant leap becomes indicative of everything we do. And then you see that the moment you're willing to step towards a conversation you're afraid of, or anything, starting a business, anything, you can't settle in any other area of your life anymore. And I think we believe that if the world around you starts to fall apart, not COVID-wise, but I mean just in general, like relationships start to suffer or things like that, we believe that that is the invalidation of the leap. But often that's actually the validation of the expansion. That's often, and so again, it's a mind fuck, because it goes, are you going to believe that your biology is going to determine your destiny, which is I need to fit in to survive, or your soul's expansion is actually determining your destiny. And hey, it wasn't that long ago, and it's still true in a lot of places, that if you share your opinion, you can die.
Yeah.
And that's still true. You know, it's still true today. And we could all have opinions that the government decides they don't want. Look at censorship is occurring all over the place if you're not part of the main narratives.
Yep. There's so many things I want to point out in that are so important for people to know, but I'm going to pivot because there's a lot I want to extract out of this conversation to serve three different groups of people. So therefore, we've touched on uncoupling. And to wrap that up entirely for now, if you were to give three actionables or takeaways that anybody uncoupling can benefit from, what would those be?
If it's safe to do so, have a closing ceremony. That is so important. To hear each other's experience, what you're grateful for, what you love about each other, what you care about each other, what you hope for each other. That's so hard to do because that is choosing love and knowing that love exists apart from relationship status. That's really hard for people to understand. It was hard for me to cultivate knowing it was true, but actually living it. The second part would be connecting to the truth. You know, so many people are not connected to the truth of what their relationship actually was like. So when I get someone to write out, what is everything that you ultimately want in a relationship? And they write that out. And then I get them to audit all their past relationships. So out of 100% of the things you want, what percentage were your past relationships? What you'll usually see is people usually exist anywhere between like 20 to 50%. And that's almost true across the board. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But mainly it's that we are used to trading what we want to get a connection, as opposed to seeing that the connection must exist with what you want. And I think the last part of that, of course, is doing an audit of, are you those things? Because if you're not living in full integrity, you want honesty, but you're not honest. You want a great communicator, yet you don't communicate. Like really getting clear that you are your list. Because if you're not your list, it's never going to show up. I promise you that. You'll keep getting your mirror. You'll keep getting the things. And, you know, I think that's the other part is that maybe this is the third, maybe I'm sneaking in a fourth thing here, but that is that everything that is in our lives up until right now is in it currently because we said yes to it in some way. And when you can take that level of responsibility and recognize that that means you've said yes to being a poor communicator, to hurting people, to being hurt, to settling for bullshit from yourself, from other people, the moment you own that, you are slammed into the present moment of truth. And truth is the most grounding thing because you can't change your life if you're believing lies, your own lies, other people's lies. You're living in a world where lies are the truth. If you live in a world where lies are the truth, you're going to feel like you're going crazy. You're going to have anxiety and depression. But the moment you can just connect to that, like what is the truth of who I am and what I've tolerated? From there, I mean, you don't know how to, you can't change your life if you don't even know what you need to change. And that's why like, for me, the most important, most powerful thing you can do is do an accurate audit of who you are. And that requires going to a friend who tells you the truth. You know, go to three friends, a past partner, a best friend, and let's say a colleague or family member. And you say, what's the hardest part of being in a relationship with me? What's the best part of being in a relationship with me? What do you notice I struggle with? What do you think are my God-given gifts? Just those questions alone will... You already probably know the answer to them, but it's nice to have a mirror back where they say, you struggle with tolerating bullshit. You struggle telling the truth. You struggle with time management. You know, you'll hear all the things you don't want to hear, but you already know it's real, so you might as well figure it out.
And so those tools, the closing ceremony, the audit, you know, in the truth, which I think is a parlay from the all of those. Can we find those somewhere on your site? Have you shared those or is there a certain workshop or something we should go to for that?
Yeah, I have my breakup recovery course is like 5 weeks that I lead people through the five stages of grief, and then I coupled them with five stages of growth. All of those things. The very last part is the closing ceremony. And you can do the closing ceremony without the other person. That's the other thing. So if it's not safe and you already know if that's true, if you're using it as a way to reconnect with someone who's unsafe, don't do that. Set up a chair for them, leave it empty, and you can change chairs. It's called a gestalt. You can change chairs and speak as if you were them. And what you might do is garner some really beautiful insights into their own struggles.
Three signs, because I know a lot of people are sitting here right now who are teetering on, is this my person? Am I supposed to be in this relationship still? And we always kind of know,
yeah,
but we're not always ready. What would you say those three signs are that this isn't the relationship for you anymore? It's time to uncouple.
Well, I'd say that question in and of itself just requires deeper inquiry. So it's a courageous question to ask. It's just often people don't follow it till they have to. And so I think that's a big line. And I know you teach this in your work too, that, you know, it's one thing to have conversations because you have to, but it's another thing to have conversations and make leaps and choose to be expansive by choice. You know, waiting till you have to is still, you're doing it great. But how many months down the line could you have done that first if you just followed the intuitive hit? So I think in that question is obviously, that's an important question to be asking. And that's a good sign that there's at least something that's required to be figured out. Your trauma, your growth, your expansion. The next question I would ask is, do you know yourself? Like for me, when someone feels disconnected in a relationship, their disconnection with their partner is often due to a disconnection with themselves. And sometimes that can be a projection onto their partner. And so going into your own work of figuring out, what do you value? What matters to you? What do you love? What kind of relationship do you want to create? Are you committed to doing that? Then when you're in that space, what happens is all of a sudden you go, holy shit, this person is willing to do that and I'm afraid of it. Or this person is not in alignment with my values and my commitment to growth. There's a great book called Too Good to Stay, Too Bad to Leave.
We'll link it.
Too Good to Leave, Too Bad to Stay. Ah. Yeah, that's what it is. Too Good to Leave, Too Bad to Stay. And it's a great book. And it's about, the psychologist talks about all of the, like what the science says, and then also what does her clinical experience say. And it's a really cool book. But in that, there was a question which was, if your partner fixed all the things and became everything you wanted, would you want them? And I think that's a great question. Also, the last question is staying or going abandoning yourself?
That's a very, very powerful ending note on that.
Well, then you start to see, is it a pattern for you to abandon self to maintain connection? Because, you know, there's sometimes people, let's say you get married at 20, now you're 45, and you chose that relationship from an inherited pattern of choices. You were taught the patriarchy, you're taught to give up your needs, you're taught to work, for, you know, whatever it is. And you wake up in your story and you go, this isn't my story. Fuck. And you wake up in codependency, realizing you've never had a sense of self. I mean, those are all challenging things to be in. And my heart goes out to people in those things, because what you're doing is you're waking up in a system. You're waking up in an incarnation, recognizing you're a soul and you're stuck. You're trapped, but you're not trapped. You're only trapped to the cultural narratives, to the systemic narratives, but they feel like a prison. That's the whole point of them. And it's waking up and separating yourself from those things. That's the real work. Can you break up with someone and know that your self-worth actually lives in your choice, not in your relationship status? That's a huge rebellion in and of itself.
Before we hopped on recording itself, you mentioned, and we'll move into the dating realm, there's a lot of abundance to be had right now. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, you know, it is inherent in times of fear, which, you know, we're definitely in that. That we cling, we get really scarce. Just look at the toilet paper example. I mean, there's literally no reason to hoard toilet paper. I mean, we all have showers for the most part, right? You know, so there really is no reason, but that shows you what is capable of the human psyche when it's in fear and survival mode to cling, to do anything. But in that is a closed mindset, which if you look at the evolution of negative emotion, for example, it exists because when we got into fight, flight, freeze, we closed down and narrowed our vision. We look for the escape route. That's why when we get into conflict with our partner and we're triggered, we become 7 years old, because we go to amygdala-based behaviors. We go to reactionary behaviors. And so when we know why negative emotion exists, you see the tiger, you're looking for the tiger, you run from the tiger, you're on ancestry.com, right? Like you win. But positive emotion, and this is based on the work by Barbara Fredrickson, is this idea of broaden and build. That when you're in a state of relaxation, rest and digest, not only is your gut in a much healthier state, but you're also open. You see things. Your vision is more broadened. You're more open to seeing possibility. This is also in the science of optimism, which other people might call the secret. You know, it's as you do, where you teach people to experience neuroplasticity, to change the way they think, to change the way they see the world. It is a real evolutionary, beautiful conscious leap to both be in fear and abundance. They are paradoxical. They feel like they're in a bit of a juxtaposition. They don't, for most people, they don't go hand in hand, because in our emotional experience, we say things like, I am scared. Well, anything that comes after I am, you must become. So when you say I am scared, you can't be something else at the same time. But if you start to use language like I feel, well, now you've created space between you and the feeling, much like if I say a part of me feels. So a part of me can feel scared right now, which is, if that wasn't true, there would be something wrong in some way with my sensitivity to what's going on. So a part of me is scared. But there's another part of me that is excited about what is to happen. What is this change in humanity? Are we waking up to the systems and the things that are happening, and how quickly we give liberties away, and how quickly we mobilize and can change, which I think that's incredible. It wasn't 3 weeks ago. I think it says, I don't know if you read that essay on the pandemic from Charles, I forget his last name. Incredible essay, but he said, like, if it was a month and a half ago, ceasing all air travel would have been bananas, you know, but look how fast we've done that. And I think if you can be in a state where, because so many people are in scarcity, there is so much abundance available and there's not a much competition for the abundance. You know, like, now if ever is a great time to start specific types of businesses. Not a great time to start a restaurant, but a great time to start other things, to pivot. Look at how long ago businesses were like, no, you can't work virtually. And now they're like, please work virtually. And I think that's so fascinating to see that if we are living in a place that anything is possible, then what's possible? And I know that's the beautiful work that you teach people, is like, okay, if you were to change your state and the way you see the world, now what? And that's true of everything, of abundance, of creation, of relationship, of love, of material. It doesn't matter what it is.
I'm quickly interrupting this episode to tell you about the free quarantine roadmap that we created to help support all of our listeners and community during this time. You can access it at the link below. It includes me speaking on all of the energetics and how they pertain to manifestation during this time in order to find your magnetism and manifest during and on the other side of this. It also has three of our deep imaginings, which is the hypnosis process that I founded. And you can access them entirely free with their journal prompts. We want to make sure to have that so that it's as accessible as possible to anybody in need. And please send that to any friends, loved ones, family members. And based on what you're hearing in this episode, if you are ready to jump into this work and double down and start manifesting during this time, because there's so much magnetism to be had, use the code all caps start manifesting to pay only $1 for the first month to help everybody right now who is needing a financial break before the regular payments kick in starting month two for the remainder of the membership. Or you can use the code all caps quarantine 50 to receive 50% off any of our a la carte workshops. The pathway is our all-encompassing access portal for members that has every single one of our workshops, including our supported class, which is once a month. My co-host and I go through and we answer everybody's questions about manifestation. And on top of that, if you're wanting to hear more stories, then please go check out on our homepage entirely free, or you can get it at the link below. It's called The Motivation, and that's our portal that encompasses every single testimonial we've picked up that we continue to add to every month. And that will help you at this time, hashtag stay in trust, to continue manifesting now and on the other side of this. Now back to this episode. Finding love in the time of COVID. I think that's been coined many times now. What are you telling people? What are you advising people on dating right now?
You know, I've already had, we have one team member that's found a new relationship off of, I think, Hinge. They obviously haven't fully met, but it's been really engaging and beautiful. They're only talking to each other. I mean, he's sending her bottles of champagne. Like, it's really, it's been really magical.
I know. Yeah, I like that.
Right? I know. Really, really, really special. Tell us about your thoughts on that and how you're advising people to navigate.
Oh, well, you know, it's a, one, I think if you're using dating as a distraction from what you're going through, but I actually think if you have a hard time being alone, now is actually a beautiful invitation to do that. Like if you notice yourself wanting to be on apps and just sort of scrolling mindlessly. The other side of it is to be, and I know you talk a lot about this, to be mindful of the beliefs that are operating below what you're, why you're doing it. You know, I think of, I had a conversation with someone recently who was telling me that COVID is sort of the perfect environment for fuckboys. And I thought, if you entertain them, you know, like
anytime's a perfect environment for them, to be quite honest.
Yeah. And when they can be in person with you, isn't that a better, I would think. My point is that what comes in, what an opportunity to learn how to say no to them. You know, that's, I always think in that perspective, like if you believe this is the perfect environment for people who are just seeking casual relationships and you feel used by them and you only attract quote unquote fuckboys, why do you? Why are you an energetic match for them? It's not, you're not a victim of their random text that says, hope you're good, boo. Like the fact that they can text you and still do that is actually a better sign of where the work lies. And finding love in the time of COVID, I mean, it's about one, if you can sit in your own aloneness, great. Then take that version of you and go into the dating world. Bring that version of you to online dating and play with it. You know, dating is about sorting. One of the things I notice most people do is that they're dating with the intention of finding someone who wants to choose them first. So they want to be picked, but they don't realize they're picking, you know? And so it's like, oh, you like me? I like you too. But are you consciously curating what you like? Or are you just waiting for someone to affirm that you're worthy of being chosen and loved when you're worthy of being chosen and loved by the very behavior that says this isn't a good match or this is a good match. So scarcity can really operate right now, especially because we're facing our mortality ultimately.
That's exactly what the true underlying fear is here. Yep.
Yeah.
Energetically speaking.
Yeah, which is always there, you know?
Always. And I don't think many of us take the time to really, to ponder it, to meditate on it, you know? And if you look at any ancient healing technique, taking Buddhism, there's a whole meditation surrounding it where you literally go through the process of dying. And, you know, so that's what we're all sort of being faced as our own threshold with that. But I think everything you just said is, it's so important to hear. And it's the perfect jumping off point to talk kind of about tests, right? So,
tests.
You know, it's, yeah, you just said it so well. It's like surveying. Can you be alone? You know, where are the actions of which you're wanting to date really coming from right now? What's at the root of those? And if you are somebody who's done the work and, you know, or vice versa, you haven't and you're using this to numb and there's scarcity, tests are going to present. You know, we said fuck boys. It comes in many different variations, sort of feeding off where you're unworthy and the behavior you're allowing. We always kind of stop there, right? Like I'm here to teach manifesting the thing into your life and the energetics around it and growing your self-worth. And you are so eloquent at giving tools and tips and you know, beyond that point. And so touching on tests, which is obviously just mirroring and reflecting ourselves, what are the most common and what are your suggestions of navigation?
Man, the most common I would say is the almost perfect version of what you say you want, but it comes with a caveat. That's I see that a lot. So let's say we date unavailable people because that's such a common one, or I date whatever you want to call it, fuck boy. It doesn't really matter to me what people call it. Either way, they're not an exact match for what you want. And so what happens is let's say someone's getting out of that behavior. So then they come up with some rules like, I'm not going to date anyone who hasn't been out of a relationship for, let's say, longer than 5 months, 6 months. And if they're not over their ex, if they don't speak positively about their ex, that they've done some personal work, you know, asking questions like, hey, why did your last relationship end? That kind of stuff is really important to ask. Do they talk positively about their past partner? Because you might become that person. So it's a good sign. Do they call all their exes crazy? That's a really good sign that they're probably the ones driving people crazy. They're the common denominator in that experience. But I'd say the test is you are going to get presented with the perfect person who just got out of a relationship, but man, were they waiting to end that relationship. Or they're going to come in an emotionally, quote unquote, evolved space, and they're going to be covered in coconut oil with extra abs. And you're going to want to say so desperately yes to that thing. And it's going to have that feeling where it has to. And it's like I find if you are justifying and making excuses about it to anybody, that's a good sign that you're being tested.
Biggest red flags. You just touched on quite a few, but
yeah, what are the ones that you see?
Oh man, I haven't been like one-on-one with people for a really long time, but you know, I see and supported, they ask us questions all the time. So it's like, I think the most common really comes down to very similar to what you're saying. They seemed so close, but it wasn't the perfect thing. But red flags, here's one just from our team. You know, we had same team member, but she's actually very in her worth and does the work a lot. And, you know, she's only just sort of interested in a relationship right now. So it's not this like needy dog paddling thing. But, you know, she had this experience where she had actually had one date prior to, the quarantining, and it was going great. And, you know, the touch points were really wonderful. And then he got a little wily and sent her a dick pic, even after she had communicated, you know, like, wow. I wait for sex, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, most people, you know, that I think are struggling with tests and mirrors would continue on. So it's things like that. It's really pushing a boundary that's been set, or close but not quite the one. What about you? I mean, you get this, I think, head on often. What are the most common you're seeing of red flags?
Man, I see that. Yeah, again, I don't work with people one-on-one either, but I definitely see it a lot in my Instagram. The red flags I see, yeah, not honoring a boundary that you've set. Bulldozing and validating. I saw this one text interaction that was really interesting. It was so fascinating to watch spiritual gaslighting, where the woman said, I'm looking for a relationship. What are you looking for? And the guy said, and I have to laugh because the guy's name was Chase, which I'm like, of course, his name is Chase.
That's fascinating.
It's like his name was Talon, you know, it just has to be something like that. But anyways, he was saying, and no offense if your name's Chase or Talon, but hey, kind of funny.
It's just the irony.
Yeah, it is. And he said, you have to be open-minded to want what I want. Mm. And she said, well, what do you want? Mm-hmm. And he said, well, are you open-minded? Mm-hmm. And I was like, what a trap. Because of course, anyone wants to identify as open-minded. In sales, we call that a tie-down. It's a question that requires a yes. So, you know, if I was selling an extended warranty, which I used to in my days at, I worked at Future Shop, which was like a Best Buy. And you'd say to a man, especially because we're often ego connected in our knowledge. So I'd say like, hey, you know a lot about electronics, right? You know, of course, the guy's like, yeah, of course I do. It's the same type of thing. Are you open-minded? Of course you want to say yes. And then she said, I don't think that we're looking for the same thing. And he said, well, too bad, you're lost. If you want what you want, you're not going to get it in California. You're going to have to move to Utah. And I was like, oh, talk about like one condescension, righteous gaslighting. And and then, you know, a sense of emotional abuse in the response.
Yep, I was going to say that. Yep.
Right. So those types of exchanges. Now, what can happen in response to that is you have to really always, as you say constantly too, you have to monitor where your worth lies. Because does your worth lie in their response to you not wanting what they want, because that is invalidating that you're worthy of it? Or did you just validate your worthiness? You know, and I think that's the thing that people need to learn, is that the victory isn't in the outcome, it's in the process. It's in who you become as you're doing the thing. Like getting the relationship is not, you don't want to be connected to that outcome. You want to be connected to self-worth, and then the relationship shows up because you attract someone who you're not seeking to heal and validate you. And that's way too much for anyone to carry. the weight of your validation, the weight of your worth. It's hard enough for me to carry my own, you know, to know that, right, yeah. to carry a backpack for someone else. And my behavior now dictates how you feel about yourself, assuming that I'm obviously living in my heart. So I see that a lot where people are not paying attention to the red flags, the big ones of unavailability. The quickest way is to ask people, like, what are you looking for? Because people ignore red flags often because they grew up ignoring their parents' red flags for survival. So they're just conditioned to ignore them. So I see that quite a bit.
Yes, all the way around. And I think that kind of stems back to what you were saying before, the just asking somebody what they want. You know, it's very hard and a lot of fear can come up, and it's sort of that jumping off of a cliff again towards your expansion. And so just knowing when we do that, no matter how scary it is, the first time, the second time, we create so much magnetism.
Isn't it crazy? Like all of a sudden the world wants to reward you for not yep. abandoning yourself.
I just love the concept that you keep talking about of not abandoning yourself is such a perfect way to put it. On one of your amazing IGTVs, you said during Corona, it's allowing people to examine their anxious and avoidant attachment behaviors. Mm. And I love the coverage of this just in general, because, you know, we all fall somewhere, hopefully secure at some point. Talk about that a little bit, what you're seeing right now.
Well, we all have different ways of responding to uncertainty. And, you know, like innately in all relationships, the sort of baseline of a secure relationship is your needs matter as much as my own, not more than my own. That would be anxious, not less than my own. That would be more avoidant. And also at the end of the day, I mean, ultimately what we're saying is, will you be here for me when I need you? You know, and that's a really important question. Do we trust that our partner will be there? Will they have our back? Which I think in a lot of ways in the backlash to patriarchy and then lost sometimes in the messages of feminism is not needing people, not wanting to depend on them, which of course meant self-abandonment historically. So there's a real fear there. But at the same time, there's, and I think this is the dance, this is learning how to individuate an adult, is can I be in love with you and hold on to myself? Man, that's such a dance to learn. And in the response to what's going on, you know, some people are very complacent and lackadaisical, and maybe we might call disassociated or more avoidant, or just not triggered by what's going on. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that response. Just like some people are terrified and becoming like the police, you know? And like I was walking through a grocery store where I was going to walk down the aisle at the same time as a guy, and he's like, don't walk down the aisle while I'm here. And I was like, okay, let's breathe. Like, you know, and I get that there's a real survival fear that's going on for him. And I have the privilege of the awareness of managing both our experiences and being like, that's not about me. And that's okay. That is really the part of recognizing that there's no right way to respond to this. And my way versus your way, both of us have the right to our stories. In the inability to see each other, that will likely trigger anxious attachment systems because they're saying, I don't have you close to me. I don't know if this space means abandonment. And sometimes it will. It doesn't, and it also means rejection. And for the avoidant person, they might be like, this is really great. Like, I get to hang out at my house. I don't have your needs all the time. Because for avoidant people, closeness often means pain. And for anxious people, distance means pain. So this is why we tend to seek each other, because each one of us validates our unconscious view of the world. That when I get close to people, they run, or when people come close to me, they need too much and I don't know how to manage it. Many childhoods can create that, as you know. It can be that your parent was never around, so you want closeness, or the fact that they were never around may be the reason that you are avoidant. You know, it. What I find fascinating is we don't need to pathologize everything. We just need to know that we don't like a behavior. Mm-hmm. It can simply be that. That's enough to say that, you know, I feel anxious in these. How do I get my needs met? How do I communicate them? I mean, ultimately, security comes from the question. And it doesn't matter. Anxious and avoidant are both just trauma responses to insecurity. So the question is, if I loved myself, what would I do? If I had a state of high self-worth, what would worth ask of me right now? Would I have this conversation or would I not? Would I sit in this space and learn to self-soothe? Or if you're avoidant, learning how to get close. I mean, avoidance, the healing of avoidance is going within first. It's not often healed in closeness because the closeness is re-traumatizing. So it's going within, figuring out where the trauma is or just the fracture that says, when people are close to me, I don't know how to hold on to myself. So it usually comes from like enmeshment with a parent, maybe an addict as a kid, something like that. Does that make sense? Did I cover everything?
1,000%. And, you know, giving an actionable on it during this time, because someone's going to identify with everything you just said. Everybody will identify because, you know, we are experiencing and fluid and have our traumas. What would be like that one really important actionable takeaway at this moment?
Well, one I would do a test. You can just Google attached the book and there's an online quiz. And you can do both yourself and your partner / the person you're dating. If you're dating more than one person, you can check to see if they've got some diverse attachment styles, because you might, and know that someone else's, your attachment style is fluid. You can heal it. It's not like, oh, I was born anxious and I'm destined to be anxious. No, everyone can learn to how to create secure attachments. Everyone can heal that. It's just learn behaviors. You know, it's like anything. Anyone can learn to be a master communicator. It's not a gift reserved to the few. And I would read the book attached, but there's plenty of resources on attachment. You can watch tons of talks on it. There's lots on podcasts on it. I mean, but the book Attached is a great way to get to know a bit about yourself. The only thing in the book Attached is it doesn't really offer a lot of light for avoidant attachment system, because it's basically like an anxious person can learn to become secure with a secure person. An avoidant person, as I said before, needs to go within first before they connect. But it can be learned. It can be learned to tolerate more closeness as you learn to trust people more. And that's the healing on both sides. It's so easy to pivot between the two, because if you go from anxious to avoidant, you didn't have to learn security. You know, it's easy to go back and forth.
So I want to pivot just to support the people in relationship. They are in a relationship that feels right and they want to continue to be in it at this point. What are you seeing that tends to be the biggest triggers or the struggles that people are being faced with? When I find that this is actually a wonderful time, obviously personally, to do our own work, but it's a wonderful time to get closer, to get deeper, take your communication style deeper. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I was on a call with two friends not long ago. Well, I was on a call with a bunch of friends, but one of them said, I've never felt more close to my partner. And the other said, I've never felt more annoyed and angry with my partner. And the difference between the two of them was their baseline is the first one has had a healthy relationship with their partner and the second one has been struggling for quite some time. So the closeness brings a magnifying glass to what we're challenged with. As you said, you know, it offers an opportunity to get really close with our partner, but it also offers the opportunity to face the things, as I said at the very beginning of the podcast, to face the things that we've been avoiding, you know, by hustling, by working, by burying ourselves in other things. And what an invitation that is to finally bring the truth forward, to finally resolve some things. You know, the best relationships are not void of conflict. It's just how they manage conflict that's different. This is a really great chance to say to our partners, you know, I really want to get closer with you. I miss us. I miss this. Or what I really love is when we do this. And, you know, really choosing, because the most powerful, most successful relationships are really about shared adventure. You know, they're about newness. And that novelty from like a biological, psychological level, when you do an experience that is new to one or both of you, you associate your partner with the new experience. So you release the dopamine and the serotonin and you release these chemicals that are associated with novelty. And that's ultimately what the honeymoon phase is. We don't want to get addicted to the honeymoon phase, because beyond the honeymoon phase is that depth, that unconditional love that is when you see the human in someone else. You know, I think that real transition that usually occurs around the 6 month to 2-3 year mark is that transition where our partners become human and we see that they poop and they do all the things that, you know, humans do that we wish they didn't. And we sort of bring the best version of ourselves forward at the beginning of the relationship. And I was listening to Dan Savage not that long ago, And I love him. He's a relationship columnist and has many opinions. Very funny. But he said, you know, we sort of fall in love with our lie best selves, you know, like we are lying about who the best version of us is. But if we can actually authentically continue that lie in some sense, like, why are we not always striving to be that? I really think a lot of the times in relationship, we forget to connect to that vulnerable part of us that it misses the other, that we forget to try. We forget to be more graceful with our words. We forget to find kindness. Often our partners are the people that get dumped on the most. They get our stuff. And that's a beautiful thing, but that they can. But is that all they get? Mm. Do we connect through criticism? You know, do we connect through, you're not showing up for me? There's a question from Harville Hendricks in his book, Getting the Love You Want, where he says, most of us say my relationship is not giving me what I need, when really we should be saying, what does my relationship need from me to feel that way? Mm. Yeah. And I think that's a real transition. That's where you realize that the relationship doesn't complete you. It is a separate entity. And I think the thing we are challenged with most is we all inherited codependency. That's the model of relationship we were taught. That's inherent in the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. That's inherent in all the systems we've been taught. And so it is a real invitation and gift to learn who you are and individuate. But also in the loss of self in a relationship, especially as we usually blame the relationship and the partner for the loss of self, not recognizing that they never had a self either. As we reclaim ourselves, they're often afraid that we're going to reclaim ourselves away from them. And we don't see that there's, in the breaking of the codependency is freedom, but there's something, the relationship must then separate and become a separate organism that is fed and nurtured. There's so much fear in the fracturing of codependency that I just think that we often forget that on the other side, there's a whole bunch of relationship agreements that we're now wanting to change, which is so okay. It's just we often blame our partners for the former agreements as opposed to a system.
You said unconditional love does not mean unconditional tolerance. We'll end on this note. Break this down for us.
Well, there is a confusion that unconditional love means I will love you no matter what. But in the no matter what is this idea that I'm going to accept behaviors that are unhealthy from you, abusive, not okay. So it is normal for the mind of someone who is codependent or in an abusive relationship, that they look for more ways that they're wrong or not doing it right, or that unconditional love is what they strive for, of course, because everyone has this positive intent on that side of a relationship, that they just want to help this person. They just want to love them. And if their love was enough, then they'd change. But love is a boundary. Love is a lack of tolerance. People don't realize that boundaries are the most loving thing you can actually do for yourself and another person. They're not saying, I won't love you. They're saying, I love you, and this is what will serve the greatest investment in the container that we're creating. If you're not committed to that and you're not willing to do that, that's okay. But I'm committed to that. And if you're willing to bring that forward, then I'm willing to bring that forward. But if you're not, these are the standards to which I live my life. And if you're not ready to meet that standard, that's okay. And I think everyone needs to get to know, what is the price of admission to be in their life? You know, what is the price? You know, we think about it in a carnival ride. You have to be this tall. You know, we think of those things. But what are the standards to which we hold? And if you have none, it's an invitation. Because if you have no standards, you'll have no worth. There's no two ways about that.
Agreed. All the way, hitting that for a home run. I do want to ask you one question, because you have touched on it a few times, and I think it's really important to educate people. You know, you say if you're in an abusive relationship, can you talk to us about the spectrum of which abuse can occur that isn't just physical, it isn't just verbal, not the obvious?
Yeah, I think the real nature of, this is not my, like, I don't want to ever claim that I'm like an expert on abusive relationships. So I encourage people to seek information and really search it out, because there's plenty of beautiful resources. If you find yourself in something that you might question that, or your friends have told you you are, there's a pretty high likelihood that you are. And there's many places you can call to get support for that. So I encourage that. I will say, after that caveat, that You know, there's some real red flags of abuse. One is to separate you from your friends and your family. To isolate. That's a big one. The other one is that when they start to become in charge of how you feel about yourself, so they might use language like you're fat, you're stupid, without me, you'll never have anyone better than me. And what it does is it starts to create a dynamic of power. The other side of that too is gaslighting. I encourage everyone to learn about gaslighting.
Yes.
We talked about Chase, you know, and that texting conversation. Look how subtle that was. This, are you open-minded? It's only available to open-minded people. And then we see, you know, in that, I'm going to guess it was going to lead to polyamory.
Oh, yeah.
And spiritual righteousness. And awareness can be a trap in righteousness too. So I think when you're starting, whenever you feel like part of you has to get small to maintain anything, which if we're used to being small, that's a real, a very courageous work to finally claim yourself and your voice. You do see it though, I think, in the very subtle interactions like that text exchange we shared. The gaslighting, man, that's where people have to, where your opinion, and this is about boundaries too. Can you separate how you feel about you from how someone else feels about you? Can you separate, are your opinions yours or someone else's? You know, when someone says, I love that, and you don't love that, but you say you love that, that's a good sign that you have poor boundaries. Again, I mean, I encourage anyone to reach out for resources, but those are some of the subtle ones. Are there any ones that I missed that you can think of?
You know, I think emotional manipulation is a big one. I personally, that's how I was taught to love. So I'm constantly having to recalibrate that one. I think you covered most of them. The gaslighting's huge. In fact, Max and I have an ongoing joke where we call each other out when it's subtly happening, you know, and we're playful about it, but it brings a lot of awareness when, because both of us will pull it in very, very subtle ways. You know, it's not overt and as harsh as it could be, you know, as many experience. So I think that's a huge one. And what I just really love that you said is anywhere you're having to play small. And sometimes that's actually really hard to identify.
So hard
based on the various ways we were raised, you know, and it's intuitive, the playing small, because it doesn't feel good. It doesn't fill you up. It doesn't make you happy, you know. So I think that that's a really key one to just ask yourself first, you know, where do I feel like I'm having to play small, and then continue the questions from there. And I think that goes for everything, not just obviously the topic of abuse, but I really like that you highlighted that one to break it down into its most simplest form.
Yeah, and there's one that I hear actually a lot that I do want to mention is, and I hear this a lot from parents who are abusive to, as adults, you know, to their adult children, is something like, you make everything about you, don't you?
The narcissism.
Oh, can't you just take care of me? Can't you just stop for once, you know, this guilt, using guilt as a weapon. And it's really challenging for people who have been in relation to or raised by addicts, people who are angry, people and blah, 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 all those things, not to minimize them, but in that to take care of oneself and learn to increase your tolerance for guilt. Because in laying the boundary, there's often zero tolerance for guilt because guilt is what created behavior manipulation. So you can actually learn to lay a boundary and hold guilt. Guilt is a natural human experience when we're standing in our truth and up for ourselves when we've been conditioned to abandon self.
Yeah, we're putting out this energetic boundary workshop pretty soon. We were going to do it this month, and then we're like, wow, many people are boundaried as is, not, you know, just in like the very umbrellaed way that they're sort of stuck at home. Mm-hmm. But in one of the days, we talk about the grief that comes up or the guilt, which is humongous. You know, it's so, you know, and that's where we can often get confused, I think, when we do set a boundary. Did I make the wrong choice? You know, did I do the bad and wrong thing? And I think that's so important to talk about and look at.
It's so hard. I mean, there is a part of us, the pleasing survival part of us, that has to die in that moment. And it is a grieving death because it is letting go of what we knew as familiar and maintained connection with people we quote unquote loved and loved us, which then requires, you know, again, there's that unconditional love part, but they're family, but I love them, but they love me. But there's often a toxic definition of love, and that's where we learn unconditional love is unconditional tolerance. Because from a child's perspective, you don't have a choice. You can't run away from home and eat and survive. So you learn to tolerate, and then it gets put under this idea that love is chaos and love is uncertainty. It is not. Love is safety, love is calm, love is present, love is relaxed. It doesn't mean that it doesn't have conflict and it doesn't have uncomfort or discomfort, but in its essence, love is not mystery of do I fit in your life. Love is, I know where I fit and you fit in the same place, and it's so peaceful.
Thank you so much. You covered everything we wanted to talk about today. And
well, I'm so excited that you have me back on, and I can't wait to get you back online. It's been a beautiful evolution and exchange, and I've just been constantly enamored with your own growth and evolution in your work. And I have so many people who comment like, oh my gosh, I saw that episode with you and Lacey and I loved it. So I'm constantly reminded of the beautiful work that you're doing and all the beautiful community you have, which I am so grateful when they find their way to me. So thank you.
Thank you. And vice versa. You're always the first person in our talk when we're like, we're going to collaborate with somebody. It's always like, Mark? we feel the exact same way I do. And I just appreciate everything you're up to. I can feel, you know, how much deeper your work's gone. And in fact, there were many points during this conversation where I'm like, yep, I need to do a few workshops. It's time for me to do your work. So thank you. And I'm grateful. And I hope you have a beautiful day.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
And this is one of my favorite parts. Once a month, we pick one 5-star winner. So that means you've gone and reviewed and given the podcast your true review of what you have gotten from it, what you've extracted. And we gift you, out of gratitude for your review, a 1-year membership to the pathway. We usually do one. I think right now during this time, it's imperative that people have this work and do this work, as you know. So I'm actually going to pick 2 this week. So the first is from, your name is Wataheen. So anybody who identifies with that name, please get in touch, because you have now won a 1-year membership to the pathway. Here's what you had to say. Love it! Exclamation point. I can't tell you how much I enjoy this podcast. Listening to Lacey describe her process made total sense to why I wasn't getting anywhere with other manifestation programs. I couldn't believe the price of her programs either. I spent so much money on things that were never going to help me get to the root of the issue. I've had more breakthroughs in 3 months and feel so empowered. Thank you, Lacey and TBM. The second is JJRETI. JJ Ready? So if that's your handle on iTunes, please get in touch to receive your 1-year membership. Here's your 5-star review. Connected. I've really never stopped to think about why I feel so disconnected and unauthentic all the time. I just figured it's how I was wired. I've been in therapy for years, read all the self-help and self-explanation books, tried going sober and even celibate, but never came across something like Lacey's work, and to say I'm intrigued or hopeful is an understatement. I'm so excited to begin the work. I've listened to the podcast every day while hiking, catching up on old ones, and to be honest, I'm just waiting for my unemployment benefits to kick in before committing to the year. I'm 33 and have been a waitress my whole life, even though I have a psychology degree. And I'm finally ready to try something new, and I truly think Lacey's work was made apparent to me for a reason at the perfect time. Thank you, Lacey and the TBM team, for putting this into the universe. Please never stop. Thank you both so much. It means the world to all of us at TBM. All of us are working so hard to just try to show up and serve as many people as possible. I'm no guru. I'm no spiritual teacher. I'm side by side with you, former waitress, shoulder to shoulder doing this work. And I'm wishing everybody a beautiful weekend.